This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Hour three rolling along this morning. Good Thursday to you. Yes, it's May the 4th. Yes, it's a throwback Thursday. Yes, it's a Star Wars throwback Thursday. We've been doing that all morning long. NBA playoffs tonight continuing. Lakers and Warriors in San Francisco. The Lakers taking the first game. What will be different in game number two? How much will Anthony Davis play? Can he do 40-plus a night? In every game of this series? That's going to be the big question. Can the Lakers get that kind of dominating performance from him every night? And what does Golden State do to answer a fact that they lost game one and they did not have a defensive answer again for Anthony Davis? LeBron James didn't even have a huge game, and yet the Lakers still found themselves with a 117-112 victory in game number one. So how much will Kevon Looney be needed? He's not going to be able to stop him. They're going to have to double team Anthony Davis. But the other part of it is that the Golden State Warriors are a very, very dangerous team. We know that. And they're at a point where even though their regular season was pretty mediocre and what stood out the most was the fact that they didn't play very well on the road, that wasn't on purpose. I mean, I'm sure they would have liked to have won more games on the road. They just didn't. They had one of the worst road records in the NBA. But Golden State took 53 three-pointers in that game. That's what they do. That's what they tried to do, and they knocked down 21 of them. Find me a game in which Golden State makes 21 three-pointers on 53 attempts. That sounds like they got their offense. It sounds like it's what they do, right? It was just slightly over a half, I think, of all their shots were from the perimeter in a game in which they took 107 of them or 105 of them. That's exactly what Golden State would want to do in this series, but they still lost. They still lost this game. What was the big statistical difference between the two? Well, let's go to the three-point line first, right? So Golden State was 21 of 53. Go to the Lakers, they were 6 of 25. So they took less than half the three-point shots Golden State has. The Lakers aren't going to shoot three-pointers like Golden State. That makes a lot of sense. But when you shoot shots from the outside like Golden State does, and again, about half of their shots were from the perimeter, it means you can't get into the paint, you're not going in the line. It means you're not drawing fouls, so you're not getting anybody in foul trouble. Golden State went to the free throw line six times, right? Six times. And in overall, the Lakers had 12 personal fouls in the game, 12, while the Golden State Warriors had 24. Because again, you're forcing Anthony Davis in the paint to do what he does, 20, 30 points and 23 rebounds. You're forcing fouls on that side of the ball, but you can't do that on the other side. You might have to get Anthony Davis in a bit of foul trouble. He only had two in the first game in order to get him out on the bench so you can utilize what you do and not see it on the other end with Davis pouring in buckets. Because LeBron James is not going to be held to a very, very quiet 22 points. And that was a relatively quiet 22 points for James. I mean, again, it was mostly watching what Anthony Davis was doing and wondering, my God, can he do this in this series if it should go seven? And can he do it in the conference finals? And can he do it in the finals if the Lakers in the end want to, you know, hoist the trophy? So the two big statistical discrepancies were Golden State made more threes and took more threes, but the Lakers went to the free throw line a lot more, a lot more. Again, Golden State went six times, 29 times to the free throw line for the Lakers. Will that trend change tonight? Well, if I'm Golden State, I'm still going to shoot threes. That's what I do. If I'm getting open looks, I'm going to do it. Now, we talked at the end of the game. We talked about this yesterday. At the end of the game from Tuesday night, was Jordan Poole and the Golden State Warriors at the final possession of the game trying to tie it. Poole took a 31-foot shot, and he did so on a quick return of a pass from Draymond Green, meaning it just almost wasn't quite catch and shoot, but he just basically caught the pass, turned and shot it, had about 9 seconds left on the clock. Now, I've defended this in one way, and I'm not defending it in the other. I defended the shot selection by saying, okay, look, he's a guy that shoots. He's shot from there. He knows he can shoot from there. And he got an open look. Shooting with 9 seconds, this is where I've kind of gone in a different direction. I criticized it on Wednesday morning saying, look, I think you have to be cognizant of the time. And you have to look and say, can I get a better opportunity with 9 seconds? We've seen good players really understand what they can do in a limited amount of time. They know how long 5 seconds is. They know how long 8 seconds is. But I wonder, when I keep looking at the play, I wonder if Poole made a split-second decision where he just said, this is the best look I've got. I've got an open look here. I can make it from here. I'm going to shoot it. Or was he worried that the 9 seconds is not always going to guarantee you a better opportunity? Meaning, if I take a dribble, will the defense close in? Will the passing lane that I want, maybe want to get it to Clay or maybe back to Steph, gets closed down? And instead of me being able to take a good look, albeit from 31 feet away, and albeit the fact that there'll be time on the clock for the Lakers to run something, that if I dribble this, will the Laker defense force us into a mistake? Meaning we never get a shot off. Right? Because we always think like you can control those things with more time, but that's not always true. We've seen teams have the ball and they force up a terrible shot, a really terrible shot, because they were eating clock. And by eating clock, that allowed the other defense to set up so you didn't get what you thought you were going to get out of the deal. They needed a three. They couldn't win with a two. They had to tie the game with a three. So if you're the Lakers, guard the perimeter. No one's in the paint because who cares? If you allow the Lakers enough time to set, you didn't call timeout, so you're coming up the court. Once you allow the Lakers to set on their perimeter defense, maybe all they got to do is get a hand on the basketball. And if they just knock it, that's a couple of more seconds. So maybe Poole was thinking, you know, this is the best time I'm going to get. And if they hit a shot on the other end to beat us, I will defend this by being, look, I just felt getting this basketball right here with nobody on me, and I got an open look 31 feet out, but I'm going to take it. I've hit these before. I can take it. I can understand Golden State's frustration. It didn't look well planned out. It didn't look like it. It looked like it was disorganized in a way, right? With Poole and Green trailing on the play. Curry gets kind of double teamed. He gets it out to Draymond. Draymond's not shooting from half court, but Poole might, right? And Poole might, and he's on the left hand side, kicks it over. I think that sometimes you have to be okay with that decision. I wonder how much in the room, quietly without cameras or microphones, did Kerr and them break down that last play by saying maybe we could have done this or this in the future. Let's work on this and this. But the circumstances were when, he's a good outside shooter. He had 6 3-pointers in that game. It wasn't like he was clanging it all night. He can make that shot. He just made the shot by either one or two ways. One, he either just did it just to do it, or two, he was thinking, yeah, this is looking like the Lakers are setting up themselves defensively. But nevertheless, what this Lakers team is starting to do and starting to show has been fun to watch, even as a non-Laker fan. I know, Ron, you are one. Just seeing all of the criticism this season to then people even, going, oh, look how good they are.
And even now yesterday, I mean, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because I was sitting there in the bullpen yesterday talking to some of the other hosts and producers that are sitting here, and you know, there's another Laker fan down the hall, RJ, who produces John Granato and Lance Zierlein's show on the local side. And he's a Laker fan, and he came out with the comment that, you know, this is looking like a championship team, and I agreed with him.
Yeah.
And our friend and buddy Joel Blank was like, what? Quickly shooting it down, and I'm like, no, take a look at it. I mean, I'm looking at it. I know. Hey, you know, maybe I'm looking at it with dad goggles or mom goggles. You know, when you put your pair on and you're like, oh, my kid's the best.
Right. Sure.
I might be looking at it through that, but I'm also trying to be real and, you know, and unbiased. And I'm thinking, it's like, you know, but they do have all the right components to a kind of a championship team.
Look at the landscape for a second. Let's just go in the Western Conference for what it is right now. All right, so they're playing this Golden State team. Now, again, Golden State has the ability to win the next four and move on.
Oh, of course.
But the Lakers showed that they can win this. They've got home court advantage now in this series. They've shown that they've got a weapon that Golden State can't really defend unless they double team them. And that's going to be a nightmare for Kerr to figure out what they're going to do against Anthony Davis. But the reality of it is that they've shown some vulnerability with Golden State, and they've shown some personal strength themselves of things that they can do. The Western Conference, there's Denver, and Denver's great. Denver's fantastic. And Phoenix, without Chris Paul, still has Kevin Durant, still has Devin Booker. But they're not that far away from being in a series with either one of those two teams.
Right.
Especially if the Paul injury goes longer than people think. Now, look at the East. Let's say they manage the landmine that is in front of them with Golden State and whoever comes out of the Denver-Phoenix series. Yes, everyone loves the tenacity of the Knicks and Jimmy Butler's playoff Jimmy, and Joel Embiid could get healthier and he's the MVP, and Boston can play the wings and the three-point shooting so well. But all of them have flaws in some capacity. So there's not one overriding, dominating NBA presence like even Golden State. We're not seeing that. So yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a championship team. It's looking like a championship team. It's finding things that are absolutely working and taking advantage mm-hmm. of those things working. I don't think that they're. Yeah, look, would we be surprised if Golden State won this series in six? No, right? Because they're Golden State. But
no.
I'm not thinking that. But where did this come from?
But I'm also thinking we're at that point too. That if the Lakers win tonight, and you know are heading back home 2-0. I don't think we're going to be that surprised if they would do that.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. So I'm tonight has a lot of implications on where this Laker team actually is, but it's not the be all end all of anything. It absolutely, mm-hmm. if they lose by 15 points, that let's see them at home in this series. If they win tonight, yeah. If they lose tonight, let's still see them at home coming up this weekend. George Karl is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, NBA coach for a number of teams, but has a proper perspective on some of these teams in the playoffs. We'll ask him a couple of those questions when we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sportsman Radio.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsman Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Bill Murray here at contributing to the Star Wars May the 4th Be With You day today from Saturday Night Live. We're doing a little bit on a throwback Thursday. Star Wars Day today. You're seeing it all over, right? Social media, everybody's got the picture of something of Star Wars-ish.
Just celebrate the day.
You got to celebrate the day. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners. That's because they have so many ways to win, including slots and blackjack, poker, more and more. Of course, you can step into the sports book, bet on any sport. You got the NBA playoffs going on, Major League Baseball, NHL playoffs. PGA's biggest tournaments are coming up, including the PGA Championship this month. Right now, listeners to Sports Map Radio and this show, Wake Up Call, can get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get a 50% first-time welcome bonus up to $1,000. That's right. Get a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000 when you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. What are you waiting for? Become a winner winner today at Chicken Dinner Casino today. Remember to add the /sports for your special welcome offer. Again, winner winner chicken dinner, chickendinnercasino.com. All right, so Star Wars Day today, May the 4th. If you're a big Star Wars fan, yeah, celebrate, dress up, do the Comic-Con-ish thing today for Star Wars Day. If you were a Star Wars fan, you're not a Star Wars fan, I guess you could still celebrate the nostalgia of those movies from the 70s and early 80s. Are the prequels getting, this is my other question of the day, are the prequels getting more love than they did?
As time goes on, is it like
a fine wine? Has it aged well? Like we go, oh, you know what? They weren't as bad as we thought. They were pretty terrible. George Lucas killed my childhood. But now we look back and go, yeah, not bad.
I don't know.
I don't think that's
a great question. I don't think so yet either.
So a couple of years ago, I think we talked about this. A couple of years ago, I'm in Target. This was years ago, probably 10 years ago. I'm in Target, and they have a beautiful Star Wars box set, Blu-ray box set, like $100. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm getting this. I don't care. I'm getting this. And I did. And I sat down. My kids were young and had them watch the movies with me. And you know, they kind of were like, yeah, all right. Then I watched Attack of the Clones. That's an unwatchable movie. The second one of the prequels. It's confusing. It's unwatchable. Didn't make a ton of sense. I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't follow the plot. Unwatchable. Now you get to the end of Revenge of the Sith and you get, all right, I get Darth Vader out of the deal. All right, that's not bad. I get a cool fight with lava and I get Darth Vader out of the deal. But you know what my biggest problem was with the three other movies that just came out? The villain wasn't scary enough. Darth Vader is terrifying.
Yeah.
He's absolutely terrifying. And he should be terrifying.
And I'll give the prequels this due. I mean, when Darth Maul came out, that he was, I mean, he was awesome.
He was.
And, you know, and he was terrifying as well. But the villain in 2 and 3, what I enjoyed about the villain in 2 and 3 was that it was almost the unknown villain. Like
the Palpatine?
We all knew who it was. Yeah. But if you put your mind in, like, the characters, like, they had no clue who it was. I mean, you know, in the originals, they all knew that Darth Vader was the big badass in the galaxy.
He's, like, the first thing you see.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the first scene.
But in the, you know, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, it was the unknown.
Yeah, right.
And then Revenge of the Sith, I enjoyed this one because, you know, first of all, the dialogue is terrible. And George Lucas should never have written it. He doesn't know how to write dialogue. And the characters themselves, the actors themselves, they only had like one piece of the dialogue. He was so afraid of these things leaking out. So they didn't really know how to feed off of one each other.
Oh, I don't want to give out the script because, people will leak it.
It will leak.
God, George Lucas.
But I did like the story arc transition of Anakin.
Yeah.
It seemed a little too quick.
It was too quick. There should have been a better development to it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but the three movies that they just came out with, Kylo Ren is a baby. He's a conflicted baby. He's not terrifying. You need a terrifying man. That, like, watch Empire Strikes Back. One of the reasons Empire Strikes Back holds up so well is because the good guys don't win.
Right.
That's the main point of that movie. It's the second of the story arc. The second of your story arc should be, we're in deep trouble. How are we going to get out of this? And we're going to leave you with feeling like all is lost. There is, we're going to see the movie.
Luke had his hand chopped off.
That's it.
Han Solo is frozen and whisked away. Like, they couldn't rescue Han. And that's, I mean, you know, you left the movie with that pit in your stomach. It's kind of what, I know we were talking Marvel before, but that's what made Endgame so appealing.
Right. Everybody's
gone. Not Endgame, Infinity War.
Infinity War. Everyone's gone.
Half the planet's dead. And, like, there was nothing they could do to stop it. And it left you thinking, like, okay, how are they fixing this?
There's a scene in Empire Strikes Back that's just always hits me. Even because when I was a kid, this terrified me. I was eight, maybe not when Empire Strikes Back came out. I was terrified because I knew the story. And it's the scene where Darth Vader is in his chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around and somebody comes in to tell him something and he turns around and he just calls up a video of one of his lieutenants and the guy looks and goes, oh, Lord Vader. He starts talking to him and then he's choking him from wherever he is. He's like, that's enough of you. Bye bye.
You're done.
Done. We are finished with you.
And then
he just says to the guy, goes, he's as reckless as he is stupid. Turns around, get me that guy on my screen. Crush.
But then he turns to the other guy and goes, you're in charge
now.
Yeah,
you're in charge now.
Don't screw it up.
There you go. And then that guy ends up dying.
Yes.
That guy ends up, he crushes that guy's neck. This is crazy. Like, that's terrifying. He's terrifying. And you don't have that in the next one.
In Empire, he is the top dog then.
That's right. He's the top dog.
Because everyone was everyone got killed. I mean, he was still the top dog. He was the Emperor's apprentice. And, you know, but I guess the Emperor said, no, we need to put actual politicians in charge, if you will.
But
he killed them all off.
We were talking about this early. If I owned it, if I was Disney and I owned it, I'd oversaturate it too to get my value for my $4 billion because there's somebody that's always going to consume it. The problem is that it's a little much. And you've overwhelmed us, and I think a lot of people are tuning out. They're like, there's 14 of these things now all over the place, and I can't keep track of what's going on in
now,
the
I will
Star
say
Wars
this.
Universe.
You know what? I like what they did, and again, it's the Empire Strikes Back part. I like what they did with Rogue One.
I thought Rogue One was a good movie.
I thought it was good. And
it's like an R-rated movie.
Because you don't know what's happening. I mean, you know what's happening, but it was that realization that, oh, my God, none of these guys are – they're all going to die. And well, I didn't think about that through the entire movie until it started happening. I was like, of course.
Look at us geeking out on Star Wars. This is so fun. It's in Star Wars, the woman says many Bothans died to get us this information. That's the story of how they did.
Yeah.
Right? That's the story of how they did, where they were like, they were on this planet and they got the information up there. But you see that scene in Rogue One where Darth Vader's cutting everybody? Like, nothing. Yes. They're shooting at him. He's like, block, 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 slice, 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 kill.
Throwing it back
kill,
at him.
Kill, like, kill, kill.
You shoot me, exactly. No, here, it's going right back at you. It's like he pulled out an Uno reverse card.
The greatest thing about Empire Strikes Back, to me, the great thing about it is, say what you will about George Lucas writing dialogue. It's crappy. But he had a theme, and he was going with this theme. Nobody knew in the first Vader Luke Skywalker fight that Luke Skywalker was fighting his father, right? But when you rewatch the fight, Darth Vader knows he's fighting his son. He does it one-handed. He does it where, yeah, he's throwing stuff at him, but he's toying with him. Luke is giving him everything he had. Think about when you were a kid and you were mad at your dad and your dad could just hold you back with his hand. He's got one hand. He's one-handing this thing. It's a piece of cake. This kid is nothing. He's fighting him, but he knows what's going on. He knows what the overall deal is. And Luke is giving him everything he has. There are shots where Luke is small compared to Darth Vader, like you're like a little kid compared to his father. And at the end of it all, you know, Luke has just been completely and utterly destroyed. I mean, he's destroyed. He's lost his hand. He's hanging on for everything he's got. Sweat is pouring down. He's just overcome by the moment. And he's at his lowest point he's ever been in the series. And then Darth Vader goes, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm your dad. But you knew this the whole time, didn't you? And that was when the realization hit him. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant way to structure scenes. It's a brilliant way to structure the story narrative. It's not just Luke and Darth equally going at it. When he comes back in Return of the Jedi, it's reversed. When you watch Luke and Darth fighting in the second time, it's reversed. Luke is a larger presence. He now controls it. He has a lot more authority. When he's wailing on Darth Vader, when he's just wailing on him, It's the progression that you see from the first time when Luke was a little kid. He just kind of had the presence of a little kid to now I'm an adult and I'm taking control of this. Very brilliant screen. That's where Lucas's brilliance is. It's not in the writing. The writing's terrible. But the shot selection is good. All right, we geeked out enough. Now it's time for George Carl to join us to talk some NBA as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, a little disco for you on the Star Wars May the 4th Throwback Thursday. Kind of geeked out in that last segment. I kind of liked it. I had fun. We don't usually get to do that on Star Wars Day Throwback Thursday, do we? No, we do not. We're looking to hook up with George Carl on a progressive guest line. We had a little trouble getting him, so we're trying to get him back on. Just talking NBA playoffs with not only tonight's game, Lakers against Golden State, but how is Denver and their 2-0 lead? What does it look for changes Monty Williams is going to have to make for the Phoenix Suns without Chris Paul in the lineup? Talk about Terrence Ross and TJ Warren needing to get more playing time for the Suns. One bit of news in college basketball kind of breaking today. Big man for Michigan, Hunter Dickinson. He is the best player in the transfer portal. He'll be taking his talents to Kansas. So the transfer portal working there for the Jayhawks as they land the junior, who, again, number one player in the market. I know this is going to rile up people. There is an old school, new school approach to the transfer portal. This is probably going to go a while. I don't think there's ever going to be a universal acceptance to what the transfer portal is doing in college athletics. I mean, there's just going to be too many people saying, I don't like the chaos. But nevertheless, it's there. So Hunter Dickinson heading to Kansas. George Carl joins us on a Progressive guest line. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. And drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. How are you, Coach?
Life is good. I have a sunshiny day in Denver. Let's go play some golf.
Yeah, let's go play some golf. I don't want to keep you from the golf course, but thanks for your insight on the NBA playoffs. All right, Denver is up 2-0 on Phoenix, and Phoenix will be without Chris Paul. What do you think will have to change with what Monty Williams has got to do with the Suns in Game 3?
Well, after Game 2, even when Chris Paul was, I think they need shooting. I mean, Durant and Booker have no space, and they're not making the three balls, so I think Denver is going to continue to defend them like they've defended them. Neither one have had a great game, but they're both capable of doing a great game, so I don't think the series is over. But the opportunity for Denver is definitely bigger. I thought it would be a close series, but now with the Chris Paul injury and getting off to a 2-0 lead, I think Denver has to go down to Phoenix in some way, find a way to win a game, and bring the home court back here to Denver. And, injuries always play a little bit more of a part of the game. I think you see it with Jimmy Butler. And in Miami, with Jimmy Butler, Miami looks like they're going to get to the final, the conference finals. But Butler not playing, New York has an opportunity. Their window of opportunity to win in Miami now is definitely greater if Jimmy Butler doesn't play.
For somebody that's been with the organization in Denver and living in Denver, there seems to be this narrative, Coach, that the Nuggets aren't being respected or people don't know enough about them. They've been the number one team in the Western Conference for a while. You're closer to the nucleus of this team, but do you sense that nationally, that there's not a lot of attention that gets placed on what Denver has done, what Nikola Jokic has done, winning two MVPs?
Well, I think the rhythm and flow of this year's team is by far the best construction of its roster. And the personality of the team is more diverse and more tough-minded. They're not a great defensive team, but can they have a great defensive game? Yes. Game 2, yep. They won that game more with their defense than they did with their offense. And their offense is definitely a top-five offense when Jokic is in playing an A-plus game. And he didn't play that well in Game 2, so I expect Jokic to come out and kind of make a statement somewhere down in Phoenix, which I think is dangerous to Phoenix. Have they been overlooked? They've been a good basketball team, but they've been a regular season basketball team.
Yeah,
I think their record since the bubble is 4-14 or something like that in playoff games. But I think this year they were dominating. I think they played and built a fundamental base that's as good as anybody in the NBA right now. And I think that's what they're showing right now is they're deeper than people thought they were. Bruce Brown off the bench has been dynamic. And I just think right now, if I had to pick a winner to win the All-NBA right now, I'd pick Denver. But it's a long way to go, though. I mean, the winner of the NBA Finals usually comes out in the conference finals where you kind of know this team has a little more magic than everybody else. And right now I think Denver's on top of that list, but we still got a long way to go.
Coach, what is it about the playoffs from managing a roster, managing the length of time that a series may take? It does get shorter as teams are more eliminated. But how did you, for example, manage the adjustments that you have to make? Is that overblown or is that a real part of the process that you make? Do you make big adjustments in the playoffs or do you just make minor tweaks?
I think early in the series, you make bigger adjustments than little adjustments. And then as the series goes on, it's a game plan of, yes, you got to make an adjustment, but it's probably going to be a little bit on, a little tinker here, a little tinker there on your offense, and maybe an adjustment, especially. I think defensively, you probably make more adjustments to your plan to control or take out something that blew up on you in the first couple games.
The Lakers-Golden State series. How does Golden State handle Anthony Davis? And on the flip side, can the Lakers keep it up with Anthony Davis? Can he do 44 minutes every game?
Well, I'm not a big fan of load management. And I'm not a big fan of resting your players. I think this is overrated. I think physiologists have gotten into saying that guys are tired. And all I know is in June 15th, when they're playing for the NBA Finals, everybody is tired.
Yeah.
Everybody is beat up. And it's how you recover. And so I think you're tinkering with, I think the genetic makeup of Anthony Davis, it's on him. If he continues to play like he played, the Lakers are dangerous. But, you know, Anthony Davis' history says he's been up and down in that area.
Yeah.
So what Anthony Davis are we going to get? I think if we get the same one we got in game one, I think the Warriors are going to be in for a long series. And I'm not saying I'm not saying the Lakers are going to win. But I want you to know, I am impressed with how far Darvin Ham has gotten this team connected. They're together. They're connected. They played good defense. And they have two great players that on any night can take any team and beat another team.
Coach, how did you see last night's Boston-Philadelphia game with Joel Embiid for the Sixers? How much of that was Boston overcoming mistakes they made in game one? And how much was Philadelphia getting Embiid back and then there was something that just did not work?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think Doc Rivers is the only guy that has that answer. But I think Doc had to be frustrated with how poorly they played. They played well in the first half and then gave up a little bit in the third quarter when Boston bombarded them with the three ball. I would say it's about 50-50.
Yeah.
I thought Boston played very well. I think they reacted well. But there's no question Philadelphia played more like a regular season game than a playoff game. For whatever reason, the frustration with Embiid, Boston made some good defensive adjustments, and Embiid and Harden never got into the game. And now it's Doc's turn to go down to Philadelphia and get his team ready.
Coach, great stuff, man. I appreciate it as always. I was in Denver for years when you were the coach there, and I always loved your press conferences and loved what you brought to the Nuggets. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a great day.
You got it. George Karl joining us to talk on our Progressive Guest Line to talk about the playoff situation. And you know what? I agree with him in the sense that everybody's tired. I do. I am curious how many minutes Anthony Davis is going to be getting if the Warriors can get him into foul trouble. And I don't think they can. I don't know. We'll see. Again, tonight is going to be a real test. Like I'm going to watch a couple of different things on how Golden State goes. All right, maybe we do have to have a stronger defensive presence down low. How much is Looney going to have to get some help in the coverage of Anthony Davis? But I liked what he said with Darvin Ham. This has been an up and down year for the Lakers. A lot of it is because of injury, but a lot of it was when they had Russell Westbrook. They were trying to fit, or you know, the proverbial round peg in a square hole. I get it. And once you get rid of Russell Westbrook, I think the injuries were the bigger problem. I think getting healthy was the biggest issue, but there is a collectiveness that they've got. They played very well in their series with Memphis. They played well at the end of the season. That was real. That wasn't fluky. They overcame being on the outside looking in, and now they're in. You make the most of the opportunity you have. You win that play-in game. You win your first round game. You win your first game of the series.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Oh, is this the Ewok dance? Is this the Ewok
the
song?
The celebration that George Lucas got rid of.
Oh, he did,
the,
yeah.
Remember when he re-released all the
That's
originals?
Right.
He got
That's right.
rid of this song. To show, to put in a different type of John Williams music, which I can't complain because John Williams is awesome. But to show like the party going on around the galaxy instead, when we were kids, it was just on Endor.
It was just there. Yeah. Word hadn't reached around the galaxy yet. And that was it. So, All right, it's again May the 4th on Throwback Thursday.
Yeah, I thought it was an appropriate way to end the show.
Yeah, very much so. Very much Star Wars themed today as we close out this this edition of Wake Up Call. Tomorrow you are out.
I am out.
So we won't have the good, the bad, and the dumb. It'll just be me. We'll just be who will be running
Justin.
The show? Oh, I like Justin. So, well,
so we already have we have old what's his name, Eddie Johnson.
That's right. Eddie Johnson will join us.
Confirmed.
That's right.
Former NBA player Eddie Johnson, now Suns color analyst.
Suns color analyst will join us to talk Phoenix.
Yeah.
And then we're trying to work on a Kentucky Derby person.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a story or two with the Phoenix Suns.
Right. Very much so.
I don't think they're not going to make it.
I can't.
There's two factors here. One, we talked about this earlier. They need Chris Paul. And the other one is I just don't think there's enough chemistry with Kevin Durant and the rest of the team yet.
Yeah, that's right. I it might be in just a little much, a little late. Look.
Against good teams, they had no problem. I know they started off with 12-1 or something like that.
They were 12-1 before they went into the Denver series.
Yeah. Yep. And so, they were playing against weaker teams, and I'm not saying the Clippers were weaker, but the Clippers are weaker.
No, the weaker, of course, they lost Kawhi Leonard, and they didn't have Paul George the entire series. Kawhi played in all but two games of that series, and they won the first one, and then the Suns won four straight.
Yeah,
to close it out. Yeah, there was no. I mean, Russell Westbrook did his best to try to make the Clippers relevant in that series, but that was, too much.
So you didn't really need the gel to happen. But now against a team like Denver, you need that gel. They need to be on the same page. And
it's like what he said, George Karl. This is a much better team than the teams in the past that got to the playoffs and fizzled out. You can be a good regular season team, but not be a good playoff team.
I don't know who's this kid, Jamal Murray. Is that how you say his name? I've never heard of him.
And when they were in the bubble, they overcame 2-3-1 deficits to lose to the Lakers in the conference finals, and that was an impressive. And that was like when look at Denver, oh boy. Then they left, and it was disappointing.
I love believing in storylines, right? I love looking at the broader focus of like, oh, this storyline would be great. I think it's a great storyline: Lakers versus Warriors, Steph versus LeBron. I could see the Lakers winning this and then meeting up with Denver and then Denver getting their revenge.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Absolutely. I agree. I like that storyline. That's right.
I don't think there's much revenge needed by the Warriors over Denver.
Yeah. But no, I'm with you. You know what team I'm really this Knicks Nets Heat series is like house money.
Yeah.
For these teams. Like Miami is like, we're an 8 seed. Let's just go out there and just let's go win.
Not even supposed to
let's
be
go win
here.
This thing. And the Knicks, that is a scrappy, good, young, well-coached basketball team, regardless of what you feel about Tom Thibodeau and the way he just goes, yeah, you're not sitting. Now you're going to stay out there for the whole game. Don't worry about it. I can't play 45 minutes. Now you'll play 44 and a half. That's good. But nevertheless, they're scrappy and good and hard. I mean, that's a tough. This is a series where I don't know if either one of these teams get into the finals, but I do know this. There's something about Boston and Philadelphia where I feel like both of those teams could self-implode upon themselves.
Yeah.
That would give one of those two teams a real great chance of getting the NBA Finals.
We saw it because in game one, Boston should have just wiped the floor with
Philly. Of course they should have.
I mean, what did the Sixers throw at them? Nothing. And Boston was just like, what's this orange thing? I don't know what to do with it.
If you want to let James Harden score 45, you can let James Harden score 45, but you should be able to answer on the other end of that. They couldn't.
And stop the other guys from scoring. I mean, who cares if James Harden gets 45?
Sure. Just let him control it from that
Allow the rest of the team to get 30 points, 40 points, and you should be able to win the game.
No good, man. No good. It is.
I love the Heat. I love the Knicks series. I mean, it's just, it's a grudge match.
That's really what
it is.
The other thing is, we talked about this before, about how you go to the NCAA tournament, for example, and there's such a discrepancy between a 16 seed and a 1 seed. But even if you get to like an 8-1, there still can be this gap, this talent gap that is so big. The NBA, these are all professional basketball players. They've all played against each other a bunch of times. They know, look, play in a series, let's see. You may not have an answer for a particular player. You may know that as a team. but you're a professional. You don't go into a series feeling like the mountain is way too high. You play a game, you win, you lose. You play another game, you make some adjustments, you play, and you see what happens. So there's not an intimidation factor. It's not like a team that's like, hey, we have only 100 students, and we are somehow playing Kansas. Like, it's not that, right? Everybody knows each other. Everybody's playing each other. In that regard, if you're Jimmy Butler in the Heat, even when you're playing without Tyler Hero, you get Jimmy Butler healthy, and he's playing. He doesn't feel like the Celtics are better. He doesn't think like the Celtics are so much better, it'll take a miracle to win this game. He's like, no, we can do this, this, and this right. So whoever comes out of that Knicks Heat series, they have to be healthy. Julius Randle's got to be healthy too on the Knicks side, and Jimmy Butler's got to get that ankle unswollen. Is that a term?
Unswollen.
Unswollen. He's got to get that healthy. When they do, as you see, Boston and Philadelphia, they can make mistakes. They can blow it up. They can have games that are terrible. And then you find yourself in a situation going, yeah, you know what? Look at what Atlanta did. Atlanta had no business winning game 5 against none. What are they doing? They go out and they do it anyway. And Celtics are like, shoot, we're getting on a plane and fly all the way down to Atlanta, win game 6. But that's what you can do in these series where the pressure gets to you. It's tight. So that Miami-New York series can be a real blast. I love the way they're reminiscing of the 90s between these two teams, even though it feels like – you watch video. Isn't it funny when you watch video of something in the 90s and you feel like, my, that might as well have been black and white.
Yeah.
That might as well have been a silent movie. That video looks so old compared to the video.
Graphics look. Yeah. It's like there's no sharp edges to the graphics. It was like they just threw it on there.
It's nuts. It's like nowadays when I see a picture of somebody, whenever somebody shows a picture of somebody's yearbook photo, I can tell whether it's new or old by the color. If it's a black and white picture, I know it came in an era where a black and white yearbook just didn't make a lot of sense. Right, just that was too much. But there was a period like in the 90s, late 80s, and then in the 90s where senior pictures were in color in the yearbook. But there was a period of time where it was like, no, we don't have any color pictures in the yearbook. But it's the same thing with grainy 90s videotape. Remember when what was that old broadcaster that used to say, let's go to the George Michael sports machine?
Right.
Was that it? Was him and a Warner Wolf? Like the old, let's go to the videotape. Tape. And you watch these clips of the Knicks and the Heat beating the hell out of each other. And you're like, God, what was that from the 30s? What kind of technology were they using? Was there a guy cranking a camera with his hand?
That was Thomas Edison's original camera. Like,
what is this video? Because now we've got everything in 4K Ultra HD. And not only do we have it in 4K Ultra HD, we can zoom in and change the angle of it so we can see on the flip side what it looked like. That's what we've got now. Back, it's like, oh, look at Alonzo Mourning grabbing somebody. It's like, brrr. You almost expect like some old 1930s announcer to go, and look at Coach Van Gundy, grab the leg. Like, ugh. And there's slick Pat Riley on the sidelines as the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat get into a good old Donnybrook at Madison Square Garden. Goodness. But I love the way they've been reminiscing about that. Because if you remember if there's a stronger word than hate, find it in the dictionary and add it to those two teams back in the 90s. I thought they'd kill each other for crying out loud. I thought there was going to be hospital visits by the teams. Those two teams, it was brutal back then. I mean, it was brutal. The fact that it's almost like they calmed down to play a basketball game.
No, in fact, like when LeBron got knocked down to the ground against the Warriors late in the game. Remember that?
I can't remember
who it was. Yep. One of the players held on to him.
Right.
And, you know, and I don't know, kind of was like a borderline flop by LeBron. There wouldn't have been a foul called.
No.
That was the thing. It was like, yeah, that's routine. Yeah, just grab the player, you know. You don't want him to have an easy basket.
Well, speaking of LeBron, enjoy the game tonight. And again, we will have enjoy the day off tomorrow, Mr. Culver.
I'll try.
I'll be back tomorrow to break down that game and look ahead to the games that are going on this weekend as series continue in the NBA and also any other news that is breaking. All right, Lombardi Line is coming up next on Sports Map Radio. And again, we will see you tomorrow. This is a wake-up call.